Hello and welcome to a Search Enterprise WAN.com podcast. My name is Lisa Martinek, and with me right now is one of the authors of the Cisco Press book, Network Virtualization, Victor Moreno. Victor works as a technical marketing engineer at Cisco Systems with over 15 years of experience in the industry. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
No problem. We will be talking about the topic of Chapter 7 of Network Virtualization, Extending the Virtualized Enterprise Over the WAN. So first off, what does it mean to extend a virtual network over a WAN?
So I think the first thing to understand is what does it mean to have a virtualized network? And that basically translates in very simple terms to having multiple networks running in parallel. So as far as the WAN is concerned, extending the reach of those parallel segments to the many locations that the WAN can touch upon, that is basically the task at hand when we talk about extending virtualization over the wide area network, right? So preserving those segments as we go across the wide area network without recreating the wide area network over and over again every time we do it. So you have one wide area network, and on top of that, you have multiple segments or the multiple virtual networks, right? So that's in a nutshell what it means to take virtual networks across the WAN. Basically, you're extending the topological and geographical footprint of these virtual networks that normally would be constrained to the data center or the campus in the enterprise. And you'll see in the chapter that there's some different considerations to be had when you go over the wide area network.
Great. So how does that compare to the definition of a virtual wide area network?
A very good question. So the definition of a virtual wide area network is something that we've seen realized in technologies like DMVPN, GetVPN, even with IPsec, we create these virtual private networks over the WAN. Now, all of those approaches are geared towards creating a single network, right? And if we think of the virtualization of networks as the ability to run multiple networks in parallel or multiple segments of this network in parallel, well, what we don't want to do is actually create the virtual private network over and over and over again, but we want to basically leverage the one virtual WAN and on top of that create all our segments, right? So there's a difference there between reinstantiating protocols and reinstantiating connections versus actually virtualizing the protocols and virtualizing the connections. So the main difference there is that you have the core infrastructure being the virtual wide area network, and then on top of that, you have the virtualization of that entity that you've created across the multiple sites.
Great. Why is extending the virtualized enterprise over the WAN important?
Well, in the first place, when we create virtual networks, we do it in response to certain requirements. In some examples, you will see that the requirements are for us to support different groups over the same infrastructure. So if you take a local government, for example, it would have a police department, a fire department, it would have the city council, all the civil works area. Those different groups may need their own dedicated network, but it might not be justifiable to have a different network. So when you look at a central location, a main campus, you will see that we separate these into virtual networks. And that's just one example. You could look at engineering and human resources in a company like Cisco, for example, and we would want to separate one group from another for security reasons, for us to have not only security in terms of security of data, but also to have security in terms of stability. So if the engineering team is doing some tests and going crazy on the network, well, that would affect one virtual network, but not necessarily affect the rest of the network that's doing more process like activities. So if in the first place we separate the network into multiple segments because we have multiple groups with different needs that need to be kept independent of each other, as if they had their own dedicated network, well, the wider network would be no different at that point. You want to preserve that policy. You want to preserve that separation as you go into the wide area network. One good example of why you would even extend it to the wide area network are mergers and acquisitions. Think of a large commercial bank, for example, where you now merge with another bank and you've got all these branches, and some of the branches may be next to each other, right? So at that point, you want to keep the separation and the virtualization going across that wide area network, which is probably one of the biggest assets of an operation like that. So long story short, if you've decided to actually enforce policy in your network by creating segments or network virtualization, you want to have the footprint of it be pervasive, and that includes the wide area network.
Wow, thanks. That's a great example. So what would you say is the most challenging aspect of extending virtual networks over the WAN for enterprises?
Definitely management and operations. There are technical hurdles to be overcome depending on the footprint of the WAN. So, for example, if you're going across multiple autonomous systems and cutting across multiple providers, there may be some technical hurdles there. But at the end of the day, for the IT manager, it's the operations of these virtual networks that they need to be very aware of. And when I say that, I'm hinting at making wise choices in terms of either outsourcing the realization of these virtual networks over the WAN. So you could probably go to a service provider and get different VPNs and work with those. That has some operational implications in terms of how flexible that may be for you, in terms of what kind of footprint and reach that service provider may have for you. On the other hand, you would have some cases where people deploy the virtual networks themselves, and in those cases, you need to be very wise in terms of what technology you choose to actually implement your virtual networks so that your operational overhead from doing this doesn't grow exponentially as the number of virtual networks grows. So you should have a good choice of technology that will allow you to systematically add virtual networks if that's what your operation calls for, without incurring extra overhead for each virtual network that you're adding, right? So it should just be one more object that you handle. Think of it a little bit as a payroll. Your payroll methods and your payroll environment shouldn't change because you hired an extra 10 people. That shouldn't become an insurmountable burden and something that requires a rethinking of your systems and procedures. The same thing with virtual networks. Adding more virtual networks shouldn't call for a total rethink and a ton of effort to actually get the new networks up and running. Right. So operations and management, I think, are key thoughts to ponder on upfront before choosing to either outsource or before choosing what kind of technology you're going to adopt if you're going to manage this yourself.
Great. What preparations do enterprises need to make for maintaining virtual networks over the WAN? What is the process like for this?
So the first thing is to determine what are we going to use the virtual networks for, right? We need to understand, do we want to use these virtual networks as a one-off effort because we acquired this company and we know that this is going to be our once-in-a-lifetime acquisition and merger? If that is the case, you may make certain types of choices. Or you may have an operation where you're consistently adding virtual networks and removing virtual networks, so you have a very dynamic environment, right? So based on that, you can go out to the market and see what the service providers may offer in the wide area network for you in terms of virtualization. Or you may conclude that you're better off doing it yourself because the amount of flexibility that you have wouldn't allow you to the delays in opening a ticket with your service provider and waiting for them to actually provision the virtual network and making sure that that's all in the places where you wanted it, but you may want to have more control. So I think the first thing is understand what you want to do with the virtual networks. Once you understand that and you have a good definition of how that supports your business, then you go into the area of choosing if you do it yourself or if you outsource it to a provider. And if you choose to do it yourself, then you have to consider things like choice of technology. In parallel to all of this, your core network, or whichever way it's designed, needs to be able to support not only the applications and the service levels that you're looking for, but also there is usually going to be some overhead in terms of number of bits in the packet headers that the virtualization of the network carries with it. And when we look at that, usually that translates into some new requirements for MTU sizes in the core of the network. So basically, you need to take into consideration what your core design is going to be like as you run through this, right? If you were to outsource this to a service provider, they would actually have done that work for you. But if you are going to do it yourself, meaning you manage the end devices that are doing the virtualization, then you need to make sure that the core has everything it technically needs to support the headers and the technology that you're sending over it, right? So there's some overhead. Say, for instance, you use some level of encapsulation, there's going to be usually between 40 and 100 bytes of overhead that your core needs to take into account, right? There's also the cost of the services, whether it's the service that's providing your core service or the service that you are hiring as a virtual network service. So if you're buying multiple VPNs to satisfy your requirement, well, each VPN will have a cost. So you need to understand if your provider can actually give you a bundled package where you buy bundles of five VPNs, for example, versus having to pay for each and every VPN. The negotiating that up front is important, right? Cost is always important. But it all depends on how much flexibility you need, right? And how well staffed you are to either do things yourself, maintain the virtual networks yourself, or have the actual service provider take care of the virtual networks in the WAN for you.
Great. What do you recommend to WAN managers who have little experience in maintaining virtual networks?
So I would say leverage any familiarity that you have with technology in your existing environment. So if you're going to do this yourself, there are technologies out there that are very scalable and very interesting, but they're also very much geared towards service providers that have a very, very high level of sophistication in their personnel, meaning they have well-reputed experts running these networks. So things like MPLS, for example, fall into that category where you would need a good level of expertise to run this. And if you're not familiar with that, that might be a steep learning curve. But there's other technologies that are based on more bread and butter type networking technology, like something like enterprise virtual networks, which basically uses routing protocols as you know them today. So there's a good level of familiarity there that you should leverage. The other thing to take into consideration for people who haven't really managed a lot of virtual networks, aside from trying to use protocols that you're familiar with, if you are going to introduce new protocols, make sure that you understand the scope of extra functionality that these new protocols may bring, right? So MPLS may very well be a good choice if you control your wide area network, so that that you can do other things like traffic engineering or layer 2 VPNs, for example. But you may also have a need for mobility, and then MPLS is not really going to help you much there, but you have other alternatives like LISP, for example, the locator ID separation protocol that would allow you to actually have integrated mobility, integrated creation of the VPNs or the segments, and it has some very interesting characteristics which make them make that deployment provider independent. The MPLS deployment would have certain dependencies on the provider, since you are sending headers that are not something that providers standard have standard support for. So basically, familiarity, but also understand the scope of where you're trying to get to, because it might be a good opportunity to actually churn the type of expertise that you have within your IT ranks, right? So depending on what the scope of what you're trying to achieve is, you may want to stick to the well-known, or you may want to take a step into stuff that's not so well-known, but it would make your operations simpler, right? So it's a delicate balance between stay safe versus stay effective, right? So you've got to be effective. Just measure how much you change in your support structure versus what you want to achieve.
That's great advice. Why would enterprises not deploy virtual networks over the WAN? What might prevent enterprises from doing so?
Well, so there's technical hurdles. There's also process hurdles. So as far as technical hurdles goes, depending on the technology you choose, you may find yourself up against, say you want to, you looked at all of this and you've decided, well, I think MPLS is the thing for me. So you go out there and you say, okay, you learn everything about MPLS networks, et cetera, and then you come to the point where, okay, I'm going to talk to my provider and I'm going to tell them that I'm going to send MPLS tag traffic to them. Your provider is, by default, they're going to say, we don't support that for you. We don't support MPLS and MPLS for you. Not because the technology doesn't exist, it's just a conscious business decision from the perspective of the provider. So that would be one area where you may find a big hurdle in terms of deploying one type of technology. That doesn't mean you can't deploy virtual networks. That means you need to rethink your choices and go back and say, okay, maybe I need an IP-based solution, which my providers support IP traffic over. So if I have an IP-based solution where I'm not encapsulating in MPLS tags, but I'm encapsulating into an IP header, then at that point I can go over these different providers, right? So there's that type of technical hurdles that you may find. Now, I think the more important considerations are more on the business side. One of the main reasons why you wouldn't deploy them, the virtual network, is because you probably don't need them, right? So there's a soul-searching process involved in terms of deciding, well, I am going to go ahead and deploy virtual networks. That is the right thing for my operation. Right? Examples of places where virtual networks are the right thing are places where you're constantly incorporating acquisitions or merging companies. Right? There's a regulatory framework around that that makes the connectivity between the two companies be something that needs to be carefully policed and monitored, right? And what virtual networks give you is the ability to keep connectivity between these two isolated and have a controlled point of enforcement of policy, which is centralized and which allows you to control any sort of communication between the two networks until the regulatory bodies give the go-ahead to merge everything together. Now, while this whole thing is happening, both companies may have address spaces that overlap with each other, right? So the creation of virtual networks allows you to support this address overlap, right? So that's a classic example of when it would apply and it would be necessary, right? A classic example of when you may not need a virtual network is basically an example where you've had one address space configured for a very long time, and you now decide that you want to apply policy to one group versus another, but there's no address overlap, there's no need for you to funnel the traffic into a specific point of control. Everything is open except for you just want to apply some policy. So you want to refine the way you apply your ACLs. For that kind of more open environment, we have other tools that allow you to refine your ACLs. Rather than creating multiple networks, all you really need is a better way to manage your policy, right? So in that vein, something like TrustSec, for example, is suited specifically for that. And that wouldn't support overlapping addresses. That wouldn't actually give you any traffic engineering capabilities and so forth, but it would give you a good tool to actually do your access control list in a better way. So I think the biggest thing is, do you need it or do you not need it? All the technical hurdles we can actually overcome, and there's some really good tools out there to either work with the providers or work over the top of the providers and do it yourself.
I really appreciate your responses. They were very insightful. To our listeners, if you have more questions of your own, you can check out the book chapter download page for Chapter 7 of Network Virtualization on searchenterprisewan.com or visit the homepage for all other WAN news, tips, and advice. Thank you for listening.